24,000 feet over the Pacific, on a clear afternoon, and the roof is just gone. Not a crack, not a hiss. 18 feet of the upper fuselage, torn away in about 1 second, blue sky where the ceiling used to be. Wind at 300 miles an hour ripping through the cabin. The cockpit door is gone. The first officer looks back and sees open air where the first class ceiling should be. That happened. It happened to a scheduled airliner full of people, and almost everyone on board walked away. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tower, and this is ATIS. Today we're talking about Aloha Airlines Flight 243, and the reason that airplane came apart has nothing to do with a bomb, a storm, or a mistake in the cockpit. It has to do with something quieter, something that's sitting in every airframe you've ever flown. Metal fatigue. Here's what you need to know, and then we'll talk about why it should matter to you, even if the biggest thing you fly weighs less than one of that jet's engines. Before we go further, today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight, from first solo to airline transport pilot. Every coin tells a story. If you know somebody who just passed a check ride or you want to mark one of your own, take a look. AviationSoul.com. Let's set the scene. April 28, 1988. Aloha Airlines is running the Inter-Island Shuttle in Hawaii. Short hops, Hilo, Honolulu, Maui, Kauai. The kind of flying where the airplane barely gets to cruise before it's coming back down. Flight 243 is a Boeing 737-200, and it's headed from Hilo to Honolulu with 90 passengers and 6 crew on board. The airplane climbs out normal. It levels at 24,000 feet, and then, without any warning at all, a large section of the upper fuselage, up front, just behind the cockpit, lets go. Explosive decompression. The whole top of the cabin from about row 1 back to the wing area peels off like the lid coming off a can. The airplane is now effectively a convertible. Passengers in the first several rows are sitting in the open air, still strapped to their seats at 24,000 feet in a 200 and some mile an hour wind, with the temperature well below freezing. And here's the part that stays with every pilot who hears this story. One person did not survive. A flight attendant, Claribel Lansing, was standing in the cabin when the structure failed, and she was swept out of the airplane. She was never recovered. 95 other people lived. 65 were injured, some seriously, but they lived. The headline doesn't tell the whole story, though, because the miracle here isn't just that the airplane held together long enough to land. The miracle is what the crew did in the next 13 minutes. Captain Robert Schornsteimer and First Officer Madeline Tompkins are now flying an airplane that has fundamentally changed shape in flight. The drag is enormous. The airplane wants to be uncontrollable. They can barely hear each other, and they can barely hear the radios, because there's a hurricane blowing through what used to be the cabin. Hand signals. That's part of how they communicated. They put on their oxygen masks, they got the nose down, and they started an emergency descent toward Kahului Airport on Maui, the nearest place they could put it. On the way down, more problems. The number one engine quits. They're now on one engine in an airplane missing a chunk of its own body. And the landing gear indicators aren't giving them a clean answer on whether the nose gear is actually down and locked. They landed it anyway, 13 minutes after the roof came off. That 737 touched down on Maui and stopped on the runway. The passengers came down the slides, and investigators started walking around the wreckage of an airplane that by every reasonable expectation should not have been in one piece. So the question the National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB, had to answer was simple to ask and hard to swallow. Why did the top come off a perfectly airworthy jetliner? The answer was fatigue, and I want to slow down here, because this is the part that actually matters to you. Metal doesn't just fail because it's old. Metal fails because it's been worked. Every time you pressurize an airliner, you inflate it a little, like a balloon. The skin stretches. When you land and open the doors, it relaxes. Inflate, relax, inflate, relax. Each one of those is called a cycle. And each cycle puts a tiny bit of strain into the aluminum, especially around the places where the skin is joined together. Now remember what kind of flying this airplane did? Interland hops. Short flights. That particular 737 had accumulated something like 89,000 flight cycles. 89,000 pressurizations. It was the second highest cycle airplane of its type in the entire world at the time. It didn't have that many hours in the air, relatively speaking, but it had been pumped up and let back down more times than almost any airplane alive. On top of that, it lived its whole life in a warm, wet, salt air environment. Hawaii is beautiful. It is also brutal on aluminum. Salt and moisture drive corrosion, and corrosion plus fatigue is a partnership that eats airplanes. Here's the mechanism. On that model of 737, the sheets of skin along the top of the fuselage were joined with a lap joint, and that joint used a cold bond adhesive along with the rivets. Over the years, that bond could break down, moisture could get in, and the load that was supposed to be shared across a wide bonded area instead got dumped onto the rivet line. Right at the rivet holes, you start getting tiny fatigue cracks. Not one big crack. Lots of little ones marching along the row of rivet holes like a perforated line on a sheet of paper. And that's the frightening idea the investigation put a name to. Multiple site damage. The concern was that all those little cracks, individually too small to sound the alarm, could suddenly link up. When they join, you don't get a slow leak that gives the crew time. You get the whole panel unzipping at once. The lid comes off the can. There had even been a warning that morning, and nobody caught it. A passenger boarding the airplane in Hilo later said she noticed a crack in the fuselage skin as she walked up to the door. She didn't tell anyone. And I'm not telling you that to blame a passenger. Not at all. I'm telling you because that's how quiet this failure is. The evidence was visible to the naked eye, standing on the ramp, and the airplane flew anyway. So what did the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, do about it? This is where Aloha 243 stops being a horror story and becomes one of the most important safety turning points in the history of air travel. Before this accident, the industry more or less believed in something called fail-safe design, and it believed that older airplanes, if they were maintained, were basically fine indefinitely. Aloha broke that belief in half. The airplane was maintained, it had passed its inspections, and it still came apart. Out of this came the national push on what's called aging aircraft. The FAA launched a formal aging airplane program. They started mandating specific, repetitive inspections tied not to how many years old an airplane is, but to how many cycles it has flown. They pushed corrosion prevention and control programs. They funded research into exactly how these fatigue cracks grow and link up, so inspectors would know where to look and what they were looking at. Congress eventually got involved and pushed the aging aircraft safety rules that shaped how the whole airline fleet is watched today. The result is that when you get on an airliner right now, that airframe is being tracked cycle by cycle, and there are hard inspection thresholds built around fatigue and corrosion that exist in large part because of what happened over Maui in 1988. That's the legacy. Claribel Lansing's name is attached to one of the biggest structural safety reforms aviation ever made. Now, this affects you if you fly anything with wings, and I mean that. I know most of you listening aren't flying a pressurized jet on 89,000 cycles, but the lesson of Aloha isn't really about pressurization. It's about the difference between an airplane that looks fine and an airplane that is fine. Let me connect it to your world. Corrosion doesn't care how many hours are in the logbook. That trainer or that classic tail dragger sitting outside on a tee down near the coast is fighting the same salt air that ate the Aloha jet, just slower. If your airplane lives outside near the ocean, near agricultural chemicals, near anything wet, corrosion is working on it right now, on the inside of the structure where you can't see it. Look inside, get a good mechanic to open up the inspection panels, to put a light and a mirror or a borescope into the belly, into the wing spar areas, around the battery box, anywhere moisture collects. The dangerous corrosion is almost never the stuff you can see from the outside. Second lesson, fatigue lives at the joints and the holes. On your airplane, that means rivet lines, spar attach points, engine mount bolt holes, landing gear attach structure. This is exactly why some airplanes carry life-limited parts, and why certain models have airworthiness directives, ADs, that call for repeat inspections of specific structure at specific intervals. When your mechanic says there's a recurring AD on the wing spar or the fuselage, that is not paperwork. That is the ghost of Aloha telling you where the metal gets tired. Third, and this one's free. If you see something on a pre-flight that looks wrong, a wrinkle in the skin that wasn't there, a line of popped or smoking rivets, a crack, paint cracking in a suspicious straight line, filiform corrosion bubbling under the finish, do not talk yourself out of it. That passenger in Hilo saw a crack and stayed quiet. You are the pilot. You don't have to stay quiet. Ground it, get eyes on it. The most expensive words in aviation are, it's probably nothing, let's go. And here's the mindset piece, because Tower always brings it back to the person in the seat. We spend enormous energy on the dramatic failures, the engine that quits, the weather that closes in. Aloha is a reminder that the airframe itself has a lifespan, that it is quietly keeping score every single time you fly it, and that the failure can come from the structure you never think about because it's always just been there, holding you up, no complaints. The airplane doesn't owe you the next flight. You earn it on the ground with a flashlight before you ever start the engine. One more thought before I let you go. Those two pilots, Schornsheimer and Tompkins, flew an airplane that had never been tested in any wind tunnel, an airplane that didn't exist as a design until the second it was created by that failure, and they brought 95 people home to Maui. No checklist covers, the roof is gone. They flew it with their hands and their training and their refusal to quit. That part isn't about metal. That's about being ready for the emergency you were never briefed on, which is, in the end, the whole job. The reporting on this one comes from the NTSB's accident investigation and the FAA's aging aircraft work that followed it. And the details of that flight have been told and retold by the people who lived it. If you want to read the accident report yourself, and I'd encourage it, you can find our notes at radiohangar.com. Go look inside your airplane this week. The blue sky belongs above the wing, not through the cabin. I'm Tower, keep the shiny side up, and keep it in one piece.